Blog Talk Radio.
There is no earthly way of knowing.
Good man is on fire.
Which direction we are going?
Direct the El Camino. Would have been DWI.
We have reached a tipping point.
Non-binary, it is time once again for the tipping point. We're starting out 30 minutes late, but our guests are down with it. Akeem Young and Andrew Seabolt are going to be our guests. It's my fault we're starting late, so if you want to blame somebody, blame me and my insatiable need of working late. But joining me, as always, is the Goodman Award-winning Larry Goodman. How are you doing tonight, Larry?
Oh, in just loving the joy of live radio. It has just been fantastic. but our guests were so accommodating with the schedule. They were so cool about it. We're all good to go. Just one thing I have to get your take on before we bring on Akeem Young. To me, the most bizarre thing that's happened so far this week was Shawn Michaels offering to mediate the beef between Kendrick Lamar and Drake. With that not... I mean, what?
Well, to be fair, Shawn Michaels might be the right guy to do it because he could keep one eye on each one of them at the same time. I'm cute, and I know I'm sexy. Like, you know, I was thinking about how amazing this is. You know, we're in this era where we are McMahon-free, and we're also in an era where two of the guys who were not very highly regarded at different points in their career, as far as attitude, as far as how they treated others, as far as whether they did what was good for business or good for themselves, are now in charge. And Shawn Michaels, of all people, is in charge of sort of the new people, the up-and-coming talent. He's the one who's kind of telling them what they need to do to get to that next level. I find it really amazing, especially because the two of them are founding members of Degeneration X, which was as counterculture and rebellious as you get. But I guess it's like all things, you know, like the Two Live Crew, one day they're fighting in front of the Supreme Court, and then the next day they're having a reality show, and they're being played on Muzak in the grocery store. So I guess, like, at the end of the day, when they say anything can happen in professional wrestling, they really mean it. And I think our two guests tonight also epitomize that.
Yes, and leave it to Shawn Michaels to be the one to say no to Drew Gulak being a trainer and holding the line on that. We see how that worked out. But, hey, let's get to these guests. We've got the controversial Akeem Young waiting in the wings. Let's bring him on to the tipping point.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hey, Akeem, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you, gentlemen?
Good, thanks. I'm out of work, so that's definitely good. Man, I know you and I have never met, and from all accounts, you're this nice dude. So I'm just going to jump right in. What the fuck happened at the award show? And what the fuck happened at PCW? I don't really keep up. I mean, I keep up with what's happening at PCW, but nobody really tells me the deal anymore. So I have no idea what happened in either situation. This is your chance to let it all air out. So please do your thing.
Okay. All right. Let's start off here. One, what happened at the awards was I felt as if I, despite the many shows and many accolades and going forward what it would become with Alexander Lev, that he, in fact, was not a rookie and that he, in fact, did not deserve to win Rookie of the Year because of the circumstances in which some of his accomplishments have came by. Not going to get into too much detail with that, but that is what it is. And the whole situation drove me to a new level, like just all the way between training and wrestling and bookings and life. Like, I literally wrapped my head around this entire award. And it wasn't more so of a thing where it was live or die by it, but it was like, okay, I was one of the ones, me alongside Kip Skyler, were the first two to push for this. And now that it's here, it's in my grasp, I'm not going to let the opportunity slip by. You only can win Rookie of the Year once.
Right.
So,
right.
And I allowed it to consume me. I allowed that entire, what was it, about 3-month time span, I allowed that to consume me. Like, I was pushing myself harder in training. I was getting back-to-back opportunities and really doing everything I could to make them look absolutely amazing, all because of that award and all because of what it meant to me. So when he won it, I walked out. That was the first thing I did. I myself knew what my reaction would be if I went up to him myself and shook his hand. And with some talking to me, some people asked me to go shake his hand, and then it turned into what it turned into. The one thing I do want to go ahead and clear up between anybody with any misconceptions, there were no punches thrown. There were nobody was hit on at least between me, Lev, and Rick. I can't speak for what happened after when I stepped outside, but between me, Lev, and Rick, no punches were thrown. Nobody was hit. Nobody was, you know, in any type of situation where they got hit by any three of us. We didn't put our hands on each other. It was nothing like that.
Craziest thing about it is that I understand that two of the servers got in a fight.
Yeah, I didn't know. I heard about that after I stepped outside.
Well, from what I heard at the award show, what should have happened is somebody should have gotten a fight with the cook.
Oh.
We missed a main event opportunity. Exactly. I don't know what happened. Nobody hit that cook for that raggedy ass, the freaking fire festival looking plate everybody got. I don't know what's going on. Well, Matt, I mean, so Akeem, so the awards really mean, you know, because a lot gets said about the awards. Oh, they don't help. They're not going to pay your bills. It doesn't matter. But my thing has always been, like, people get their own value from it. And obviously, yeah, to you, this award meant a whole lot. Why did this award mean so? I know that sounds like a really dumb question, but I mean, if you are, you know, you're a rookie, like, relatively young, why did this award mean so much to you, do you think?
So the reason it meant so much, it more specifically, one, I have to completely agree with you. It's a lot of things that don't pay the bills that we want to reap the benefits from. So to say that it doesn't matter, it does matter. Because there were then words spoken from multiple sides about how they felt about not winning certain awards. They just didn't go about it the way I went about it. they took it to social media. But so it matters. It definitely matters to people.
That's the truth.
It definitely
matters
to people. And I don't want people to move forward and act like it doesn't. Okay, cool, there might be a few. But generally speaking, the same reason I felt my type of way about it, and to answer your question, is because, like a lot of people, it would feel very nice to have a small glimpse and a small, you know, taste at the benefits that you can get from working hard doing this. Everybody wants the benefits from it.
Yeah.
You know, and me being so young and fresh in the game, knowing I'm not getting signed yet, knowing I'm not, you know, in that opportunity yet, that felt like a small step forward. It felt like a step forward. It really did. Because not only did the not only was I a finalist for the award, but I was one of the first two people to ever even mention that title before, like, to be added to the list, because it was not originally added to the list. And I give all the credit to Chip Skyler. He was helping me push this thing forward. He was helping me keep it going and keep the train rolling again. And he used his following, which is a large following, to help push it forward. And I on the back end was pulling it back in with Georgia and letting them know that, yeah, I feel like this should be a thing, whether you like it or not.
I don't know if this will make you feel better or worse, Hakeem, but this is the truth. So I'm the guy who, like, tallies the votes, and I see how things are going and that kind of thing, and I try to, you know, I try to gatekeep to make sure people who are supposed to be voting in awards are, and people who aren't, and that kind of thing. And at one point, it was one of the awards where different people took the lead, and at one point, you definitely had the lead. So clearly, there are peers who saw you as the Rookie of the Year. This wasn't the kind of thing where Lev was, like, way far ahead and remained ahead. This was definitely one of the awards. And, again, this is most of the awards. People need to understand, like, when people are like, oh, does votes count? Votes counted. Votes definitely count. And at different points, every one of the categories except for two had lead changes, and at least three categories were decided by three votes or less. So definitely you should know that your peers really did see you in that light, and that I believe you were definitely the runner-up, and it was very close. So,
Hakeem, so you didn't win the award. You come into 2024. You know, maybe that the way that went down colored some people's perceptions. I don't really know if it did or it didn't. You come into 24, and then what happens?
So here came the realization that, oh, fuck, I messed up. I did. And so my first thing that I did after everything happened, I apologized to Rick and Lev. And during that conversation, Rick was telling me how he knew, you know, you should know, yeah, you're going to eat shit. It's going to be tough. It's going to be rough, but you'll spin it back around. That's just the type of person that you are, that I, from what I know of you. So, cool. I knew work had to be done on my end, not only on the wrestling side of things, you know, building back those relationships that I might have, you know, burnt down those bridges for, or, you know, people who, that was really their first chance to see me and meet me, letting them know that, like, you know, I know first impressions matter, but this was just a very passionate moment that I will work on out of wrestling to see why did that bring so much out of me. And even at training, even when I was at Platinum, I was, like, taking days off. I trained the one of the 2 days during the week that they train, or, like, just not trying to really let wrestling continue to consume me the way it was to that point. So then me and Jeter. Real simple concept of what was going on. I, as the young wrestler who was not prepared to be in that role, there's no way to prepare for that. And me being the young wrestler, I allowed that situation to kind of, the way I felt about it, and I would be very truthful, I didn't tell many people this, but the way I felt about it was, I'm already dealing with the consequences of what happened at the awards. This is just bullshit on top of the bullshit. That's already going on. That was my, I will completely say that's exactly what I was thinking of it. Like, and it, even that week I was like, I don't know. I'm not worried about the match. I just don't know how I'm going to react. So Friday comes and I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to do it. Let's go ahead and get it over with. If, as long as I'm here, it's going to happen eventually. We get into it, and me and Jeter talked about this. It was just a little miscommunication plus me being young and dumb, and that played out exactly how it played out on the showcase that you've seen on IWTV. it went down exactly like that. And so even afterwards, Gita talked to me. We was all in the locker room, kept it very short and sweet. You're not welcome here for the time being. Come back again when you got your mind straight and you got your shit together. And that was that. We talked about a few weeks ago. It was about a month ago when we had talked and hashed that situation out, and we had a really good conversation about that. So that's what's happened. That's what happened.
But since then, you've gotten yourself other opportunities, and from what I'm hearing, you know, you're conducting yourself like a pro. So, like, you know, what changed in your mindset, or how did that come about? Because you've got some opportunities now.
Yeah. So one thing I really want to do, two people more specifically that I want to thank going into this kind of renaissance of who I am is Ace Haven and Zach Mosley. The Coastal Crew did not give up on me. They didn't. Even after the awards happened, they told me they had to cut me from a show, and they let me know that I would be good for the one after that. And moving forward, it has been nothing but respect given on both sides, and I'm really appreciative of that bridge that he did not allow to get burned by what happened. Same with Ace. Ace was not Ace did not hesitate. Ace and Amy, both, even at the awards, did not hesitate to show love and appreciation and let me know that Pro South was always open. And since I've left Platinum, as can be seen, that Pro South door was open. So all in all, it's been not only me having that time away, especially after what happened at Platinum, because my next booking was not for like another month after that. And having that time away after everything happened and being able to kind of do some self-reevaluation and get myself together, it allowed me to find that inner peace to be able to be back around and not allow it to consume me the way it did leading up to the awards. So that's kind of been the step forward I've been taking, and I've been really, really strong on myself and not, you know, slipping back into anything that was bringing me to that point to begin with. So that's kind of been how I've been moving forward with everything since the Platinum situation.
And where do you see yourself going from here? I mean, like, so you've only been wrestling, what, a little over a year now?
Yes. So I've been currently working on mending those bridges back at Platinum. That's home. It's home. And just not being there and, you know, witnessing the transformation and everything has blossomed into since I haven't been there, including the new building and everything, it kind of reality set in right then and there that, oh, I need to be back home. It's just no way, there's no, you know, way I can continue to grow as a wrestler if I'm not in a place that was putting me on the right track to grow even in the first place. So I've been working on that, just building more opportunities for myself, allowing the people to see that Hakeem Young is not these two incidents right here. Everything leading up to that, that is the young man that you know and that you grew to see in your locker room a lot more, because I'm hungry and I do want those opportunities still. There are a lot of places within Georgia that I know right now I've kind of, you know, broken the bridges to, but that I would like to mend. And just continuing to get better just as a person, not even as just a wrestler, just figuring out what makes me happy, what keeps me happy, what keeps me driving. And that's moving forward. So, you know, talking to as many promoters as possible, sending in footage, same thing I'm always doing. Nothing's changed. It's just the focus had to be kind of redirected for it to be done in the proper way.
Are you doing the SSP Savage 16? Are you in that?
I actually do not have that answer yet. We will all find out on Sunday. Southern States Pros, go to their Kick channel, go to their Facebook page, find that Kick channel, go to that Kick channel, listen to Josh Wheeler and Murder One announce the official Savage 16 competitors. I know personally that not a single name that was entered, that was thought about, that was processed up on their Facebook page is even doing half of what I'm going to be doing to anybody in that entire tournament. It's easy. It's simple. The competition is getting ran through. I don't see nothing else, nothing more being done about that.
You know, allow me real quick, Larry and Akeem, too. One of my pet peeves in modern pro wrestling is this idea, like, I'll see a question post on Facebook or something like that, where someone will go, would you rather have a wrestler that's really, really talented but hard to deal with, or would you rather have somebody who has, like, incredibly limited potential, but they'll listen and learn? And every dipshit goes, I'd rather have the guy that listens. And I used to say this all the time, and it needs to come back again. If you value, as somebody who's a mentor or somebody who runs an organization or books or whatever, if you value compliance over competence, then you need to get into a different business. Any kind of performance art, any kind of sport has always valued talent over somebody who just gets along. In fact, if you're somebody who's too compliant, there's a good chance you're a really shitty performer. Performers are born of ego and fire and passion, and sometimes it's misdirected. Sometimes it comes out in a way that the people at large don't approve of. But at the end of the day, if you think that you are an organization that is solid and strong, if you think you're somebody that can help somebody, and you don't book Hakeem because you're judging him on his two worst moments in wrestling, then I would say that you ain't shit. Platinum Championship Wrestling was founded on, these are folks that nobody else will book. And everybody who had made fun of us and oh, they're a bunch of actors playing wrestler, and who's Stephen Platinum, and blah, 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 blah. Now, of course, it's all the norm to use PCW people. It's all the norm to laud praise on people who I mentored, like Matt Hankins, right? So at the end of the day, I think, Akeem, as this year wears on, I think people are just going to begin to beginning to loosen up. Because let me just pose this other question. Was Murder One a pain in the ass to deal with his entire fucking career? Was William Huckabee hard to deal with his entire fucking career? Was Chip Day difficult at times to deal with? The answer is yes. Anybody who's any good, and that is, I think Larry, is this correct? I think anybody who's any good at some point had conflicts or were difficult to deal with, had a reputation of somebody who didn't listen. And you know what that told me? That they were good. Because give me somebody who's completely okay with everything that's going on all the time, and I'll give you somebody that's not invested in what they're doing.
Yeah, I would question their passion if they're always cool with everything and don't have an issue with anything.
And I'll tell you, you would have seen some pants shitting rage if certain groups did not win awards that did. You would have seen different forms of sour grapes and whining and crying and all. We see it all the time. And you know, Hakeem, I got to be honest. When we were going to have you on, I thought, like, oh boy, this is going to be me against him, kind of going at it. And instead, you turned me around to your side, because you're absolutely right. Maybe you didn't act in the best way possible, but at the end of the day, there are people who cared, who won and who lost, and who dealt with it in a negative way, but in a way that people didn't see necessarily. Well, I'll tell you what they did. They got together in their little chat groups, and they bitched and moaned about how unfair it was and how I, all the way from Florida, somehow puppeteered everybody in the voting and who I puppeteered them in the voting. At the end of the day, it was whining, bitching, and moaning. The difference is you were in the moment, and you were invested in winning a thing. And that's a risk. So many people
reject things before they can be rejected. It's much braver to strive for something and risk that feeling of not getting it. And that's exactly what you did, and you reacted thusly. So, again, if you're listening to this and you're wondering, should I book Hakeem, my question is he fucking good? And if the answer is I don't know, then find out. But if you're saying no because, well, I'm not sure I can deal with the headache, then you should have gotten into something else besides professional wrestling, because professional wrestling is one giant fucking headache. But when that headache lifts for a moment, there's no feeling like it in the world, and it's worth it. And guys like Hakeem are definitely worth it, my opinion.
And if you want to see any of my content, always feel free to hit up Hakeem Young on Facebook, The Hakeem Young with two E's on Instagram and Twitter, or X as they call it nowadays. DM me. Ask me for match footage. I have plenty of it. Please.
And Hakeem, before we let you go, where can we see you in the upcoming weeks?
I mean, this Friday, Piedmont, Alabama, Pro South Wrestling. This Saturday, Chatsworth, Georgia, Pro South debut Georgia show at the RCW building. Catch me next week, Pro South once again. That Saturday, the 18th, I will be at Premier All-Stars. And so on and so forth. For right now, you can catch me at Pro South every Friday. But those are my three outside of that bookings. The only last confirmed booking that I have so far is June 29th at Coastal Empire Wrestling. So catch me there.
Great. Thank you for doing the show. Much appreciated.
Thank you for having me.
And just do me one favor. Please do not show up for Stranglehold. Then we're going to have to go out. But no, seriously, man. Thank you for coming on and explaining yourself. It's not an easy thing to do, and I thought you did it. You acquitted yourself very, very nicely.
Thank you. And I appreciate you all for having me and even thinking of me as a guest.
You are welcome. Take care.
Yes, sir. You as well.
Hands across America. Good job, Larry. I thought Hakeem, again, you know, this new crop of dudes, man, they got good heads on their shoulders. Man. These are smart guys. These are emotional guys. When you look at wrestling past who would decry someone like Hakeem, they were bigger pains in the asses than anybody. I mean, we were just talking about how, like, what terrors Shawn Michaels and Triple H were.
Yeah.
And now they're the guys in charge. Like, people change, people grow. And one thing I do not like about the idea of cancel culture is I don't like the idea we're cut off from the ability to grow and prove themselves. And that's where I don't like the idea of canceling anything. And I don't think he did anything worthy of canceling.
Well,
you can send a message to me or and I will.
Speaking of good head on shoulders,
uh-oh.
That's a nice segue to our next guest, who is manager, wrestler, involved in editing. Or was, I don't know if he's still doing that, we'll find out. He was nominated for Manager of the Year, and let's bring him on, Xander Seybold. Welcome to the Tipping Point.
Nice. Hello, gentlemen.
Oh, hello? Nice. Hello. Oh, my. Yes, hello.
Glad to be here.
Again, I don't think you and I have ever met. I'll open with a tough question. You're a smart guy. You're a guy who clearly gets so many aspects of the wrestling business. Why the fuck are you wrestling? Are you insane?
Partially, actually. Not clinically diagnosed, but I've been told by a few people. I'm wrestling because really, well, okay, I'll start at the beginning. I started as a manager. And I loved doing that. I really did. I loved managing. I loved being at ringside. I loved working with the guys that I worked with. And I loved just being in the wrestling business. It's always been, you know, something I've wanted to do. Loved managing. And then, you know, other aspects of the business behind the scenes, editing things, poster work, social media work, things of that nature. They've just come along and come along and come along. But as fulfilling as managing was to me, it wasn't everything that I'd wanted. And when I first started, I thought it was. When I first started, I was like, I never want to wrestle. I don't think my body can handle it. I don't know if my mind can handle it. I don't know if, you know, I just don't know. I wasn't confident in myself. And a few particular guys and gals around me in my circle kind of opened my eyes without really meaning to open my eyes, and that they instilled the confidence back that I could specifically wrestle, but that I could do anything I wanted to do. And so one day, it literally was just as simple as one day I woke up and I was like, you know what? I think I want to wrestle. So I started training to wrestle while I was still managing, and here we are. And it wasn't from a standpoint necessarily of I didn't want to manage anymore. It was just from a standpoint of this is really what I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to be an in-ring performer. I've always wanted to do what my idols did when I was growing up, and even my idols when I've really got, you know, headstrong into wrestling and everything. And so for me, am I insane for doing it? Yeah, sure. Is it taking years off of my body? Totally. But here's the thing. For me, once this aspect of my career is done, I can move on to the 47 other aspects that I've self-trained or trained or been helped to get to or whatever. I don't just have one route, you know, I have several. And so, yeah.
So can we back up to the very beginning of where you started? Because I first encountered you at Anarchy when you were doing editing and posters. And you're this guy in the meetings who didn't say a lot, but sitting and listening and absorbing everything that's going on. But where were you before you got there?
Oh, that's where I started. I started at the Landmark. That's my home. Always has been. The way I started was me and one of my friends, Blake Blackwell, who's the commentator for Anarchy and does some work in other places, we've been friends for ages. And we were literally sitting, this is the summer after I graduated high school, we're literally sitting there on his bed one day, and we're like, what the hell can we do to entertain ourselves? It was the first summer I had a car. We were going to go do these amazing trips and everything and whatever. And it's like, what can we do? And I'm like, well, I wonder if there's any independent wrestling around. Just something for, because it was a Friday night, I think, yeah. And so I look up on Facebook, and people, just a little sidebar, people say that there's nothing quite like flyering or papering a town, you know. There's nothing quite like that to draw people in. Well, I am a living and true testimony that that's total bullshit. Because I literally looked up independent wrestling in Georgia. I literally looked up independent wrestling in Georgia on Facebook, and I found this show, Pro Wrestling Caribbean. Richard Ramos runs it. I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with him. But
yes, yes.
I found it, and it was at the Landmark Arena, and it was in Cornelia. And I live in Dahlonega, you know, not too far away, 45-minute drive. And so I'm like, ah, hell, we'll go check it out. So drive over there and walk up to the ticket booth, get our tickets, go inside. And this is not to disparage any of the show, any of the people on the show, any of how the show was promoted or anything like that, because obviously I wasn't around to see how any of that was set up. But there were literally three people in the crowd. It was myself, it was Blake, and it was Eric Mulder, the longtime Anarchy fan. I'm sure Larry, Ed, Steve, you're both familiar with him. he sits front row at all the shows. He's always there. And So we watch the show, and it's over. And I'm like, I wonder if we could start trading at this price, or if we could just talk to somebody, how we could get in the business. Because at this point, I'm like, you know what? We're here. Screw it. Whatever. I'll ask the question, you know. And so I ask Mulder, I'm like, do you know how we could get started? Is there something going on here? Something? And he goes back and he brings out Alex Keitel, who's just, I guess, backstage or whatever. He trained at the Landmark and whatnot. And we talk to him for a second, and he brings out Azrael. Ooh, Azrael, you know. And talk to him, and one thing leads to another, and then I'm in. I start at the Landmark, and everything after that's history. So that building's really home to me. All of the people around me, you know, Larry, you said you first met me at Anarchy. I was very blessed in that my knowledge, my history knowledge of the business kind of opened a few doors for me at the very beginning. It kind of, you know, oohed and aahed a few people. And for me, that was my foot in the door. I was like, if I can wow these people with my knowledge of history of the wrestling business, after that, I'll let them teach me everything I need to know. And so I did, and it worked. And here we are almost 3 years later. It feels like the blink of an eye, but here I am.
How about influences? Your influences, you know, you're a student of pro wrestling, of the history. Who are your influences on how you developed as a performer?
There's a wider range of people, you know, not within our scope of what we consider the wrestling business here in Georgia. People like Jim Cornette, people like J.J. Dillon, people like Bobby Heenan, who I watch as managers, and then people who I watch as wrestlers. Like, Bobby Eaton is my favorite wrestler. I think he's the most underrated wrestler in the history of ever. I love all of his work. He's so smooth. Nothing he does looks like it's killing somebody, but it looks like it hurts, and it's just very smooth. He's a very smooth worker. And past that, people like Ric Flair, people like Rick Rude, people like Shawn Michaels, anybody I can watch. And I'm really into the Crockett territory, Mid-Atlantic, and that type of wrestling and all of that. Even when Crockett sold to Ted Turner, you know, the wrestling's still kind of the Southern wrestling, I guess is what you'd call it. That's kind of just been my general influence. And inside our circle, you know, my idols, my mentors, obviously people like Rick Michaels, who's one of my best friends, who's really kind of led me along this path and helped and let me work underneath him and learn from him and all of that. And people like Todd Sexton and Nick Halen, who I could go to with one of my matches and say, could you please watch this and give me any feedback? And they'll give me a laundry list of bullet points after bullet points after bullet points of stuff I need to work on. And I'm lucky to have that type of that circle around me, you know? So there's a lot of influences, both outside in the general wrestling landscape and inside our little circle of Georgia wrestling.
Talk about what it's like. I mean, I've been seeing you lately, of course, in six-man matches with the Grapplers a number of times. I know, you know, you're doing other things in other places, but could you just talk a little bit about what it's like to be teaming with two esteemed veteran masked men like the Grapplers?
It's anything beyond my wildest dreams, seriously. It's to get in the ring and work with those guys, to, you know, to move from being on the floor to being in the ring, that's a tall task for my tag team to really embrace. It's not hard, but it's difficult to put somebody in that spot and say, okay, so you want to go from having little to no interaction in a physical manner to being completely involved in what we're doing. The fact that they've taken that chance, the fact that they've taken what I wanted to do and they've ran with it. They've embraced it. We've done this six-man thing. It's incredible, and to be able to learn from those two and to learn from all the people I've been in the ring with in general, but especially to be able to learn from those two every time I step in the ring, every time we're in a locker room together, every time we're in a car together. It's incredible to have that type of influence around me.
something that made an impression on me was when I saw you begin showing up on results from Royston, that you're going out there regularly and wrestling. I thought, okay, this guy's serious about this. Talk a little bit about that aspect, about going out, you know, being kind of a regular at Royston there and like really getting your feet wet in singles matches.
Well, I'll tell you that that was entirely 100% without question my decision. That was somewhere I wanted to – that was somewhere I saw as a weekly show before, you know, any of my mentors, the people who kind of point me in directions of what to do or whatever, before they even had really a say in it. I put myself into that spot because I saw that place as it's a weekly show. It's somewhere for me to go and have a match against any caliber of talent from the very beginning, from people who are just starting out like myself to experienced veterans who can, you know, walk and talk with me in the ring and tell me things while I'm going and talk to me backstage. And I have all of those influences too. And so that's what it was for me. It was a chance for me to go somewhere weekly to, you know, I'm guaranteed 3 weeks out of the month because Southern Honor, obviously, but I'm guaranteed at least 3 weeks out of the month to have a match once a week at least. And for me, that was very important to have a match every week so I could keep my, I could keep working on getting in shape outside of it, but I could also work on getting in ring shape inside the ring actively, learning as I go and putting myself in an environment where it's not necessarily just me versus the world, but it's a me decision to put myself into that world, if that makes sense. And so that's what it means to me. And that's an excellent group of guys there who really want to take that place and build it up and make it something. And selfishly, I would love to be a part of that. I would love to build that place up. Not even just from an in-ring aspect, but from any aspect, anything I could do to help out, just being there. And so, all in all, I think it was a great decision. Looking back, I've started there about 7 months ago-ish, and I've had a blast ever since.
You know, you mentioned Rick Michaels, and, you know, the opportunity you've had to sit under his learning tree. I mean, invaluable experience for sure. But did you, you know, it seems like you're going to be, if you're not already, could be in the booking end of wrestling. Does that interest you?
Oh, it interests me greatly. The chance to not only influence the world of wrestling from being inside the ring or being on the floor or anything I do, but to influence the world of wrestling in the ultimate way, the way that nobody really thinks about at first glance, is how the show's put together. How are the matches put together? What are the storylines? How do you put thought into the storylines? What is the logic and the psychology and everything like that? So the chance for me as you know, a self-professed student of wrestling as I am, and as people will call me from time to time, the chance to learn from that aspect, the aspect of actually making the shows happen, is absolutely something I'm interested in and continue to study. And again, having the influences I have around me, I'm very grateful in that I can bounce ideas off of people. And if they're used or if they're not, that's one thing. But the fact that I just have that chance at all to have those minds telling me, this is a great idea, we should do this, or this is a great idea, here's what you can do better, or this isn't a good idea, and here's why. And that's the important thing for me, is I'm not just getting ideas. If I have one, I'm not just getting it shot back and like, no, you're stupid and green, shut up, idiot. You know, it's, this is a good idea, we're going to run with it, this is a good idea, here's what we need to change, or this is a bad idea, and here's why. And that, more than anything else, is a great learning experience, and it's something that really validates my want to learn how to book and my want to learn how to put shows together. So, to answer your question in short, Larry, yeah, I'd love to. I would love to, and I love doing it. It's any aspect of the wrestling business, any way I can involve myself in the wrestling business, I'm going to be there to do that.
I have one more question, and I'm going to turn it over to Steve. You know, from the first time I saw you cut a promo, it seemed like you felt you were natural, at ease on the mic. Where did that come from? Did you have other experience where you did a lot of talking and just that, or how did that come about that you have that ease on the mic?
Well, to be completely honest with you, it doesn't make any sense to me because growing up and even now when I'm not in the ring performing or when I'm not being tasked to cut a promo or anything like that, outside of that, I am so damn shy and reserved and introverted, and if a stranger walks up to me and tries to have a conversation with me, I could maybe go 5 words before I start dip, 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 dip. That's all folks, you know. So it's really weird. I couldn't honestly tell you where it comes from, except for, to me, and this is just kind of how I live my entire life, but to me, there's two lives. I live two lives. I live a real life, and I live a wrestling life. And I don't say a real life and a wrestling life as if wrestling isn't real, you know, but I say real life and wrestling life as in real life is everything except for when I'm in the wrestling bubble, except for when I'm focused on what I'm doing. And when I'm in that world, something just changes, and I'm able to go out, and I'm able to do things that if you put me as a keynote speaker in front of an auditorium full of people, I would be shitting my pants. But when I'm in a ring cutting a promo, or when I'm backstage cutting a promo, or when I'm talking to wrestlers, or when I'm in the ring wrestling, there's no stage fright. There's no – everything comes off.
Yeah.
It's great. So it's just – it's two different worlds for me entirely, I think. And I think that compartmentalizing that helps me make a difference in that between – in my mind, I mean – and I'm able to get away all that stage fright, that introvertedness and all of that. And I'm able to put on, I guess, what you would call a front, that I'm this boisterous, you know, talkative, which I am, but you know what I mean, this boisterous guy who isn't afraid to say anything. But in reality, if you take me out of that bubble, I couldn't say suey if the hog's happy, you know, so.
Yeah. My thing... This is a question. I don't know, even know if you can answer it, but here's my question. So you're hanging with some pretty heavy hitters, right? Like Rick Michaels, these guys who are used to being in charge, having a vision, and that kind of thing. But it seems to me, as an outsider looking in, that they regard you as a peer as opposed to somebody whose voice doesn't matter, and they are exclusively the mentor, and you are exclusively the mentee. Is that safe to say that you do have a say in things that are going on, that they listen to your ideas, that they occasionally incorporate them, and that kind of thing? Is that accurate, what I'm thinking?
There's a fine middle ground, I think.
Yeah.
Where it kind of leads largely towards what you're saying. Do they incorporate, have I pitched ideas before that have been incorporated? Yes. Do I get to go toe-to-toe with these guys and talk about not only the wrestling end of it, but the psychology and everything like that? Do I get to go toe-to-toe with these guys? Yes. But at the same time, there is a clear line where I am being mentored by these guys. And while they respect it, I'm so grateful to be, like I said, I'm creeping up on 3 years in the business. I'm so grateful to have people like that who will surround themselves and who will listen to my ideas, but they're still able to make a difference and draw a fine line where I'm still being mentored by them. It's not just, okay, you're either shut up and listen or you're one of us now. There's a very thin line, which I've been very grateful to have, where, like I was telling Larry, if I have an idea about myself, about our team, about a certain show I'm on, about anything like that, I can pitch it to these guys and I can have it tossed back to me. But not only are they tossing it back to me, they're giving me critique and criticism while I'm going. So it's kind of a learning on the ropes thing for me, where I'm able to have these ideas and to pitch them and then have them critiqued as we're going and as we're talking.
Here's the other part to my question. So I feel like part of your ability to do as much as you've done in wrestling so quickly is I feel like, you know, I'm a big fan of the Medici effect, which says that somebody who brings a strong field of knowledge or interest from something outside of the thing in which they are working tends to achieve success in a different way in that thing. In other words, what is it about you? What is something that you're very knowledgeable about or something that you're passionate about that isn't pro wrestling that has helped you in pro wrestling? Does that make sense? Because clearly, I think there's a big part of your secret lies there, and I think it's something that people can learn from.
As 100% insane and weird as this is going to sound, I have two passions in my life. I only have two. I don't really dabble into a lot of sports or anything like that. I have two passions in my life. In terms of hobbies, in terms of things I'm interested in, pro wrestling, obviously, and music. I'm very big into music. I was a band kid. I have 4 years of marching band. I was a section leader. That helped me develop a lot of leadership skills, a lot of my confidence in what I'm tasked to lead something, or what I'm tasked to be the guy in the room. I could be the guy in the room. And a lot of that was given to me through marching band. But even past that, the type of music I listen to a lot of thought-provoking music. I listen to music that keeps, when I'm listening to it, I'm not thinking, oh, this is a good song. I mean, of course I am. But I'm also thinking about, God, he played that there. That sounded kind of cool. Or, wow, that section and that time signature is different than that section and that time signature. And so it just keeps my mind going constantly, and that's how I operate. That's how I live. I have to keep my mind going constantly with something, or I have nothing. I'm like, oh, God, what am I going to do now? I'm not listening to music. I'm not in the wrestling bubble. I'm not thinking about anything. I can't think about nothing, is my thing. And so music's helped me a lot in that when I don't have wrestling to turn to, I have music to turn to. I can listen to music and I can think about something there, and that brain power, the idea that I have to keep my mind going really helps me in wrestling when I'm in a bubble where I'm at a show for 8 or 10 or 12 or even longer sometimes hours. I'm able to keep my mind going, and it's all because of the conditioning of playing music as I did at one time and having to think about the next note or the next bar or the next signature change or the next tempo change or anything like that. It helps me it translated that to wrestling for me, where now I can keep my mind going constantly.
Again, the lesson here is it's wonderful to love wrestling. It's wonderful to be obsessed with wrestling. I think all three of us talking to each other here are or were, right? But there is something to be said for having passions outside of wrestling. I think it lends itself to, it makes you smarter about wrestling in ways that you can't even imagine or understand, you know. Like with my kids, I made them learn a second language very, very young and then start working on a third. And some people would see that as kind of like tiger momish or abusive. And I was like, learning other languages changes your brain in ways that we can't even comprehend. And again, music is it's fantastic. I think like music and comedy, strangely, and stripping, like the adult industry, comedy, and music, all three tie into wrestling in a way that I can't quite grasp, but there's a reason. I think, I mean, I'm not even kidding for a second. I don't know what it is, but it's like strippers and wrestlers have more in common than any two groups of people I have ever encountered. just in terms of how they see the world, how they see potential customers / marks. Like, the similarities are all there. And again, if I had it to do all over again, give me a group of strippers, give me a group of musicians, and I'll conquer the world in wrestling. Because they're just so sharp about things, and they make connections mentally without having to be taught them. I think, you know, you mentioned that you were self-taught, and without diving too much into that, I can see that. And, you know, a lot of the great ones, as much as we're always like, you got to go to the right school and you got to get trained, you know what? This is going to sound like blasphemy. Horseshit. Like, there are four different methods of learning primarily. And one of them is just getting your hands dirty. There are people who just learn better that way. There's people who learn all different kinds of ways other than having Les Thatcher sitting there and making you do a 5-5-5 drill again and again and again. There's a million ways to skin this cat. And I think guys like you are so important because, again, there is no one way. And if there was, wrestling would be even more boring. But instead, there's a chance. Because when guys like Rick, I'll tell you why Rick has attached himself to you. And it's because he sees that it's vital. It's vital for people with new visions and new ideals and young people to come in and take this thing over. So people like me and Rick can just fuck around and do what we want. So thank you.
Xander, what was your instrument or instruments in music?
I'm a percussionist. I play drums.
All right. I had a feeling.
Freak,
which is
freaks.
Most. It's the most complex instrument to really play, because if you think about it, if you're playing a horn or any type of brass instrument or a string instrument or anything like that, yes, with string instruments you're having to focus yourself on finger placement, and if you're playing something like a violin or a cello, you're having to focus on the bow and everything. And I actually, little known fact, I don't think anybody, I've never really went into it, but I'm a drummer. But I'm also, I used to play, we have a bluegrass type of educational kind of school thing up here. I was in for about 6 years when I was in elementary school and middle school and the first couple of years in high school. I actually learned how to play a violin there. So that's something I don't really talk about, because it's so comparatively to everything else that's happened in my life. It was so very long ago, but it really did help me shape a lot of things in my life, having that kind of structure and having that place to go where I could learn how to play this. And I was applying myself even from that age. But drumming is impossibly difficult for a lot of people, because it takes so much hand-eye coordination to hit right in the center of the skins and not on the edges and not on the rims. It's very hard to coordinate yourself that way. And so that helped a lot with everything, and it helped a lot with my mind. So drums and any type of percussion instruments like that, marimba, xylophones, anything you put in front of me and give me a drumstick or a mallet, I could probably still reliably play. And if you give me a bow and a fiddle, it might take me a couple weeks to figure it back out again, because it's been 6 years, but hell, I'll try it. I mean, so.
This has been great. So tell us, before we get out of here, where can we see you perform in the near future?
Tomorrow night I'll be doing the spot show we've got for Southern Pride in Auburn. Saturday. Oh, God. Where the hell am I Saturday? Oh, my Lord, that's an OSWA. Good God. And this day, like this day coming up, has been really hard for me to remember for some reason. Like, I just can't. OSWA on Saturday, Cordelia. Next week I'll be back at SCA in Royston, and then I'll be wrestling Pat Roach for the Georgia TV title at GCW next Saturday. And then after that, obviously Southern Honor, Southern Pride, you know, I've been on, and we're looking into new places to go in the future. Maybe some West Georgia places we've never been before. And I myself, I'm looking to get out there in the world a little bit and see what this scope of wrestling really has to offer from an in-ring standpoint. So just keep an eye out, man. I mean, I've got Facebook. I've got an Instagram I never use. I've got a Twitter or a carrier pigeon or whatever the hell we call it that I really never use. But Facebook, much like my old man persona of only watching Mid-Atlantic and loving Bobby Eaton so much, Facebook is the only place you're really going to be able to find anything about where I'm going or where I've been or anything like that. So any of those places that you could think of off the top of your head, chances are more than likely, you know, I'll be there. So
fantastic. Thank you for giving us our time. Yes. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, the pleasure is all on this side of the room, as they say. It's a real honor, and I can't wait to meet you in person. God help you when we do. I don't think Georgia Wrestling would be ready for that, but they would fucking learn to love it. So, thanks a lot, Xander.
Hey, well, thank you guys for having me on. I love this. I've never been interviewed before, actually. This is my very first. So Steve and Larry, you can put on your mantles in 15 years that you took my interview virginity today. And I will always remember this. So thank you guys for having me on. I really enjoyed talking to you both.
You're entirely welcome.
All right. I'll see you guys down the road.
All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
What a delight.
Yeah.
Both,
Larry,
both of those guys.
You may wonder why I disappeared too.
Yeah.
Here's a story that we will categorize as only could happen to me. So I won't bore you with details, but suffice to say, until the end of this month, when I get a huge influx of cash, I have been, as the kids say, riding dirty. In other words, you know, my registration tag is expired and license plate and all this kind of shit. But it's like, I just need to get to the end of this month, right? And it's something I've gotten in trouble for recently. And the warning was, the next time you get pulled over for this, just so you know, you're effed. Like, possible jail time effed. So, you know, take care of this. And I'm like, I'm going to take care of this as soon as possible. But, you know, blah, 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 blah. As I'm talking, there's a cop in the lane next to me, and he's going cool, and he's going slow. So in other words, I go like, oh, man, he suspects something about me, so he's trying to get behind me to look at this license plate.
Oh,
and I go,
man.
If he sees this license plate, I'm effed. So now I'm going slow. And now we're both going at a crawl. And so at this point, the jig is up. So I'm like, maybe I can just desperately shake him with this move. So I'm going slow. He's going slow. We're approaching a red light. And I thought, at the last moment, I'll go into the far left lane, which is a left turn only, and hopefully he'll be stuck in that far right lane and have to go straight. Nope. He basically hits his lights just so he can pull all the way, cut across traffic and park behind me at the light. So at this point, adrenaline's flowing. I know I'm effed. I held on the off chance that for some reason he wasn't trying to check me out. But as soon as we made that left turn, he hit his lights and his whaler. And that's when I got off the phone. And I went, I am so thoroughly screwed. And I go, and then I thought, oh, I should have stayed on the air. This could have been a tipping point history of me you know, getting arrested on the air. But as the guy walked up, and as soon as I saw his face, he saw mine, and he smiled big because he's a regular at the Waffle House, who I always treat incredibly well. And he goes, just give me an explanation on why I'm seeing what I'm seeing when I looked at the thing. And so I gave him the real explanation, but just a truncated version. And he just went, he's like, please take care of that. I'm like, I'm going to. And he goes like, cool. And he gives me a fist pound and leaves me alone.
Awesome. Oh, great story. Great story.
I have not caught a break like that, Larry, in years. So needless to say, I'm wide awake now. And I loved that interview. And I loved meeting Hakeem. And I love Tipping Point. And Larry, do you know what July is?
I do not.
Our 8-year anniversary doing
Tipping Point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I ask you, as I often do, where are you going to be this weekend or the next?
You know, let me start with next weekend because it is unbelievable. The next weekend, the number of attractive shows. Friday night, the second Forever Pro show. Thursday night, Action is running in Noonan at a brewery. Friday night, Forever Pro comes back for their second show. Saturday is Classic in Athens, Southern Fried. Sunday is Southern States Pro and Deep South. And then we get a break, I think, basically for the Memorial Day week. And I'm sure there's some shows, but the next one that I'm thinking about would be Macon Classic City Wrestling. So there's a lot going on. This weekend, I think I might just have to go to see Pro South's debut in Georgia.
It's tricky. It's IWE this weekend also, and I'll be curious to see, because, you know, Southern Honor drew 491, according to someone I trust very much. So will IWE match or exceed it, or will Southern Honor finally catch up and pass them a little? And if so, what does that mean? This weekend, I'm sorry, my heart is still racing. last Sunday was Cinco de Mayo, and I work at Torchy's Tacos, so that was absolutely batshit. And this Sunday is Mother's Day, and I work at Olive Garden. It is their craziest, busiest day of the year. So they're having me work open to beyond close, meaning I'll be there from 9 in the morning till midnight.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's going to be wild. But then the week after, really excited, the commentary gig, which has turned into a paid commentary gig, by the way, and is going incredibly well, they've got another show in another venue, and I'm going to be there. The establishment, if you haven't looked them up before, run by a guy named Marquise Carter, who also wrestles at DMC. A lot of respect for him. And there's been a couple of good friends in Florida who are really pushing for me to go to the shows that I love, Pro Wrestling Action here in Florida, not to be confused with the one in Tyrone, Georgia, is a show that I really respect, and they've grown by leaps and bounds, and they keep going in bigger and bigger venues. And then, of course, my favorite show of all time is Mayhem at the Mills, and they're having a big show coming up soon. So I'm thinking, Larry, I need to get out and see some of this stuff. But I'm having a ball commentating, and I'm thinking there's a chance I may take a trip to Georgia by the end of the year and do something similar that I did before when I went through and saw Southern Honor, Pro South, and IWE, not necessarily in that order. I'm thinking I need to roll through again and see if I can do like a nice long weekend and see like 3 or 4 shows, assuming I can get my car in order and not get arrested anytime soon.
Well, I'm glad you made it on here. I'm glad you avoided arrest tonight, and hopefully we can come back with another show in maybe a couple of weeks from now.
Absolutely. For the people who have been writing me and saying how much they enjoy it when we're doing the Tipping Points on the regular, I agree with you. Larry and I are both incredibly busy, but we love doing this show, and 8 years is nothing to sneeze at when you look at the people that we've interviewed and the things that we've done and the tribute shows that we've done. and the type of special event shows. You know, Larry, maybe you and I need to put our heads together and come up with a special theme show maybe during the summer to do. Something
those
akin to like the promo shows or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe we can think of something else super cool. Maybe we'll put our heads together with Duke and Rob and see what we can kind of come up with.
I like it.
But in any case, special thanks to our guests, Xander Seabolt. Really great to talk to him, as well as Hakeem Young. He's Larry Goodman. I'm Stephen Platinum. Special shout out to Officer Cruz for leaving a brother alone. And we will see you once again on the Super Bowl.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.